Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Recording in progress.
This morning, I want to talk about a text by Dogen. It's a book called Zooey Monkey, and there's a new translation of this by Shohaku Okumura called Dogen Shobogenzo Zooey Monkey, the new annotated translation put out by Wisdom. Unfortunately, it's a $45 book. These are talks, informal talks that Dogen gave between 1236 and 1238, and he would give them in the evening after Zazen, either in the monk's hall or in his private quarters. And the Zooey Monkey is much easier to understand than much of Dogen. It's pretty plain English. And it was recorded by Dogen's main disciple, Edjo, who became the second abbot at Eheiji. But these talks were given at a monastery that Dogen founded earlier than Eheiji called Koho Shoji, which is now in modern-day Kyoto. So, I have a selection that I want to read to you. I'm going to read the whole section, and then I'll do the commentary on it. So here's the section I want to read. In an evening talk, Dogen said, "In the tradition of the ancestors, the true way of understanding a Zen sermon is to follow the teacher's words and gradually reform the mind that has known and thought various fixed concepts since time immemorial. Even if we have previously thought that a Buddha has excellent characteristics, is fully equipped with radiant light, and has the virtue of preaching the Dharma and benefiting living beings, like Shakyamuni Buddha or Amitabha, we should nonetheless believe our teacher if he or she tells us that a Buddha is nothing but a toad or an earthworm. We should give up our formal knowledge. If we look for certain excellent characteristics in a toad or an earthworm, such as radiant light or other Buddha virtues, then we still have not reformed our discriminating mind. Just know that what we see right now is Buddha. If in this way we continually reform our discriminating minds and fundamental attachments according to our teacher's instructions, we will naturally become at one with the way. Students of the present day, however, cling to their discriminating minds. Their thinking is based on their personal views that a Buddha must be such and such, and if what they hear conflicts with their ideas, they say that a Buddha cannot be so. Having such an attitude and wandering here and there in delusion, searching for what reinforces their perceptions, most of them never make progress in the Buddha way. When their teachers say, climb to the top of a 100-foot pole, then let go of your hands and feet and advance one step further, they hold their bodies dear and say, I can only practice while I'm alive. They do not truly follow their teachers. Consider this carefully." So that's an address that Dogen gave to his students at Koshoji. So let's take a look at this. The first section is, in an evening talk, Dogen said, "In the tradition of the ancestors, the true way of understanding a Zen sermon is to follow the teacher's words and to gradually reform the mind that has known and thought various fixed concepts since time immemorial." So what came to mind for me about this is that as Westerners, we have access to many Buddhist texts and thoughts. So there's the sutra literature, which I must say that probably many of us have not read. And then there's a lot of modern commentary on Buddhism, on various aspects of Buddhist thought. And I would say that for the most part in the West, we are not aware that these commentaries and texts come from different schools of Buddhism, and they may span thousands of years of commentary and present various systems of practice. So in my own studies, I have read and studied many schools of Buddhist thought and over time settled on Dogen's teachings as my Buddhist guide. So that's why I tend to teach what Dogen taught through his writings rather than the whole span of Buddhist practice texts. And since those texts are so varied from Buddhist school to school, they will at times contradict each other. So I try to understand what Dogen is saying about the Buddha way, rather than worry about what some other school may say. So I'll give you an example. In many schools of Buddhism, Buddha nature has to be acquired over lifetime, after lifetime. So one is not endowed with Buddha nature. It's something that has to be acquired. But Dogen contradicts this idea. This is a contradicted idea in Zen. And in our idea in Zen, we say we are Buddha nature rather than we have Buddha nature. That is how we are born. We and all beings are Buddha nature. Here's another example. Many schools teach that nirvana is some state of mind, place, something that is outside the wheel of birth and death. And yet Dogen teaches that birth, death, and nirvana are presencing simultaneously. So if we get attached to a certain fixed view or a certain kind of teaching, and we hear Dogen's teaching, we may think that Dogen is wrong. But we need to keep an open mind about this, or vice versa. So I try to understand Dogen's words and convey the understanding to you. I take this very seriously, and I try to make sure that what I'm teaching is what he meant as the best way, in the best way that I can understand it. So in this way, this is just one example of letting go of fixed concepts. We make our best effort to understand Dogen's point rather than compare it and reject it based on something else that we might have read somewhere that we're attached to as an idea of what Buddhist practice is. So that's what came up to my mind about this first paragraph or this first section of this text. But there may be something else that you are attached to that isn't very workable. When I was teaching Uji at San Francisco Zen Center, not this last class, but for several years, one of the students was always saying to me, "Nirvana is unconditioned. Nirvana is unconditioned." But that's not the teaching of Soto Zen. So they were attached to this idea because that is the teaching of many schools of Buddhism. So just throw that out there. Here's the next section. Even if we have previously thought that a Buddha has excellent characteristics, is fully equipped with radiant light, and has the virtue of preaching the Dharma and benefiting living beings, like Shakyamuni Buddha or Amitabha Buddha, we should nonetheless believe our teacher if they tell us that a Buddha is nothing but a toad or an earthworm. We should give up our former knowledge. All right, so here's an example that Dogen's offering. In his case, this is the example about toads and earthworms being Buddha. This is the example of not holding fixed views. So, you know, in some schools of Buddhism, earthworms and toads are absolutely not Buddhas. And they cannot become Buddhas until they are reborn into the human form. And after many lifetimes, acquire this nature of the Buddha. So if you're listening to Dogen and you have this fixed view about earthworms and toads, then you're going to want to reject what he's saying. You're going to say, well, wait a minute, earthworms and toads can't be Buddhists. But actually, in our school, earthworms, toads, tiles, walls, rocks, cups, people, chairs, pets, etc., all are sentient beings. And that's another thing that we usually categorize. But in Chan, everything is sentient. So if an earthworm is sentient, then an earthworm also is Buddha nature. All beings are Buddha nature. Thus, an earthworm is a Buddha. A toad is a Buddha. This is our teaching. So Dogen says, if your teacher tells you that an earthworm or a toad is Buddha, then you should believe your teacher. You should drop your fixed ideas about this. I would say it should become a koan for you if you hear some teaching that seems contrary to your understanding. You should ask your teacher about it. Be open-minded about it. Explore it as a koan. And in this case, what does it mean that a toad is Buddha? What does it mean that an earthworm is Buddha? How, you know, does an earthworm have radiant light? How does an earthworm benefit all living beings? How does the earthworm or toad preach the Dharma? Then Dogen says in this section, if we look for certain excellent characteristics in a toad or an earthworm, such as radiant light or other Buddha virtues, then we still have not reformed our discriminating minds. Just know that what we see right now is Buddha. If in this way we continually reform our discriminating minds and fundamental attachments according to our teacher's instructions, we will naturally become one with the way. So he's saying, if we have fixed ideas about what the qualities of a Buddha are, we're going to reject the idea that an earthworm is a Buddha. Or we're going to reject the idea that we are Buddha, or that someone else is Buddha, because they don't exhibit the characteristics that we think make up a Buddha. And in this case, we say, Dogen's saying, oh, where's their halo? What Dharma do they speak? How do they save all beings? They don't speak in a certain way that I think Buddhas should speak. They don't look like I think a Buddha should look. I don't look like a Buddha, I think, the way Buddha should look. I'm not acting the way I think a Buddha should act. So I have all these preconceived ideas about what makes Buddha, what makes a Buddha. And Dogen's saying, if you have all these fixed ideas, they get in the way of your being able to practice the Dharma. He says, don't look for certain characteristics, because if you do, you're going to miss what's manifesting right in front of you. So, how does our practice change when we see that right now is Buddha? You should explore this. You should look at your life and say, look at yourself in the mirror and say, right now is Buddha. When you're having a bad day and you did something stupid, look at yourself in the mirror and say, right now is Buddha. Or this person that you don't like, right now is Buddha. It's not so hard for us to look at our dogs and say, right now is Buddha. We all know that our pets are Buddha, but what about us? What about toads? What about earthworms? What about cups? What about our enemies? What about people we just kind of don't like? So he says, exploring this koan is reforming our discriminating minds and fundamental attachments. The next section is, students of the present day, however, cling to their discriminating minds. Their thinking is based on their personal views that a Buddha must be such and such. If what they hear conflicts with their ideas, they say that a Buddha cannot be so. Having such an attitude and wandering here and there in delusion, searching for what reinforces their preconceptions, most of them never make any progress in the Buddha way. You know, I would say, as Americans, we are really good at clinging to our preconceived ideas. We are really good at reading something that resonates for us, and then that becomes a fixed idea. And then it's really hard to get us to not view the world from that point of view. So sometimes, at least from the perspective of what Dogen's talking about, he's saying, you know, if I say to you, earthworms are Buddha, if I say to you that toads are Buddha, probably in this talk that he's giving, he's talking to monks who, and particularly in some other schools, who have other ideas about what this is. But what ideas do we have that do not fit our understanding of the Buddha Dharma? Probably we're not so concerned about the doctrine of whether or not toads are Buddha nature. But it is an interesting question, because we may not be so concerned about toads and earthworms, but we're very quick to decide that other people are not Buddhas, or that we are not Buddhas. So we cling to our ideas based on these fixed views. And that's when we go astray from this. We get very judgmental and make a lot of discriminating ideas. We have a lot of discriminating ideas, so we have to question what Dogen's calling our personal views about everything, not just the qualities we might think make a Buddha. So I think, you know, if we're suffering, if we are telling ourselves a story about the nature of our experience, and that story is creating suffering, that story is creating anger, that story is creating greed, whatever those unhelpful emotions are, that I'm right and that other person is wrong, I'm angry about that, I want to punish this person, I want to change this, and it doesn't matter how I do it, then we need to wake up to this and say, this is this kind of discriminative thinking that Dogen's talking about. This is clinging to our ideas based on a fixed view. So we need to question that view. If we look at someone and we think that they are this or that with a critical mind, can we change our judgmental mind? Can we see them as Buddha? Can we catch ourselves in that moment and recognize this critical mind that is not helpful? This critical mind that's creating suffering in ourselves and by extension creates suffering to others. How do we cultivate gratitude for what we do not understand? How do we find this generosity? How do we see that all beings are Buddha nature? And therefore, all beings manifest or can manifest Buddhahood. Dogen does make a distinction between all beings are Buddha nature and the manifestation of Buddha nature as Buddhahood. So the next section here is, when their teachers say, climb to the top of a 100-foot pole, then let go of your hands and feet and advance one step further, they hold their body dear and say, oh, I can only practice while I'm alive. They do not truly follow their teachers. Consider this carefully. So this story about climbing the 100-foot pole is from a Chan teacher, and his name is Changsha Jingshen, and he lived from 788 to 869. His Japanese name is Chosha Kaijin. Here's the poem that he wrote about the 100-foot pole. He said, "Atop a 100-foot pole, an unmoving person. Although he's gained entry, he hasn't reached the truth. He must step forth from the top of the pole. Then the world in 10 directions is the complete body. Atop a 100-foot pole, an unmoving person. This is this person when we are caught in our fixed views." He says, although he's gained entry, this person is someone who has put their foot into the Dharma gate, entered in the Dharma gate. Still, that person has not reached the truth. That person is stuck in that place. That in order to unstick ourselves, we have to step forth from the pole. And when we do that, we look down and we go, oh my God, that's a 100-foot pole. I don't want to step off that pole. It says, but if we can do that, then the world in 10 directions is the complete body. We become the world in the 10 directions, the complete body of the Buddha Dharma. Elsewhere, in Dogen's writings, he says about this stepping off the 100-foot pole. He says, to depart from your ego as well as from a desire for fame or gain. Unless you become free of these things, your practice will amount to nothing but meaningless trouble, having nothing to do with emancipation. Again, Dogen said that to step off the 100-foot pole means to depart from your ego as well as from a desire for fame or gain. Unless you become free of these things, your practice will amount to nothing but meaningless trouble, having nothing to do with emancipation. If you think of fame and gain, you might think that only within the realm of being famous like a celebrity or something like that, are gain having something to do with getting a lot of money or all these kinds of things. But there's also a way in which just our little everyday selves, we want to get somewhere. We want to get something. We want to feel important. We want fame and gain. We want fame and gain in the Dharma. We want to be enlightened. And we have a preconceived idea about what that is, which Dogen says in another fascicle is not particularly helpful, because our preconceived ideas get in the way of us seeing that we are Buddha nature, seeing that the earthworm and the toad are Buddha. So Dogen's saying, he's saying, if you are unwilling to drop your former ideas, you will not succeed in practice. So it's pretty straightforward. I love this line about I can only practice when I'm alive. That's great. What does that mean, I can only practice when I'm alive? You may think it means, well, I can only practice when I'm physically alive. If I literally step off a 100-foot pole, it will kill me. But what is it that dies when we step off the 100-foot pole? What dies is our ego. Not the good ego, but the one that's clinging. The one that has these fixed views. Because when we have fixed views, when we're deeply challenged about that, what is challenged is our sense of self. And that sense of self becomes threatened. And we feel as if we are going to be annihilated. So when we feel that way, it's really hard to let go of our ideas. As a matter of fact, we say to ourselves, wait a minute, I can't practice because I won't be alive. So for this reason, often when we're truly practicing, it is like stepping off the 100-foot pole. You're afraid that you're not going to survive this long step down of letting go of your fixed view, because your fixed view is a reflection of who you think you are. And this who you think you are, maybe you feel like you're right and therefore you're a righteous person. Whatever it is, whatever that fixed view is that we're clinging to. And then when we step off this vast, high, 100-foot pole, letting go of our cherished but unhelpful views, assuming that this is the path of some kind of annihilation, we discover that it is like stepping off the curb. We discover that it is actually a way to end our suffering and respond to our life as a Buddha's life, to engage in the dignified behavior of a Buddha. Now, an earthworm or a toad is going to look and act just like an earthworm or a toad. They are going to manifest as nothing special. We are going to manifest as nothing special. Yet, they and we are, can be, a fully endowed Buddha. We and they are engaged in the continuous practice of Buddha Way. Can you see that in yourself? Can you see that in others? Nothing special. Still imperfect. Still a work in progress. Thank you.